This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Vasque, whose footwear has built trust on the trail since 1964. Vasque has been pushing the limits of trail footwear for over 50 years, with hiking, backpacking, and trail running footwear built to perform on any trail in any condition. Season after season, Vasque is driven by a spirit of innovation. Field testing and consumer feedback power product development, ensuring that boots and shoes continually evolve to meet the needs of modern outdoor enthusiasts. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We talk to Sasha Cox, founder of Trail Mavens. Learn more at www.vasque.com. That's www.vasque.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
The way that the natural world is waking up and sort of rushing toward the sun is the way that I feel in the spring and definitely in the summer. I'm looking forward to everything right now. I'm looking forward to every morning when I wake up and our bedroom is already filled with sun. This is the time when my skin gets darker because I'm just spending more time out in the sun and everything just feels like just lush.
This is Simone Martin Newberry, and she's what you would call a plant person, which means she says things like this.
I think if I didn't have plants in my house, it wouldn't feel like home to me.
Simone speaks with a deep reverence for the natural world. Whether she finds it within the bounds of her longtime city of Chicago, or when using her vacation from full-time work as a graphic designer to take trips around the U.S. Simone has a beautiful blog called Darker Than Green, where she documents her appreciation for flora with photographs, green city guides, and contemplative writing. Before I started She Explores, I worked a more traditional 9-to-6 job and lived in Boston. Almost every evening, I walked around my neighborhood and took photographs with my DSLR. I focused on the houses lit up for the evening and the snow falling in front of the streetlights and the outline of trees against the night sky. On the weekends, I often went for walks down the bicycle paths, keeping my eye out for the new flowers come spring. I didn't really realize then that I was seeking the outdoors on those long walks. Maybe because I didn't really have to look for it. It was right in front of me. Simone is a lover of subtler beauty and a believer that if you're curious, you can find the solace of nature wherever you are. She has a way of embracing the overlap between the plant world and our own that helps me understand myself and the human condition a little better. I hope you'll enjoy getting to know her too.
I was born in Hollywood. I grew up in Los Angeles, like right in the middle of the city. I had family in the South, and so we would go and visit my grandparents in New Orleans every year, but most of my time was just spent in Los Angeles. We didn't do really any family vacations, so we would go to New Orleans once a year and then just stay in LA, and that was my world, and I never really knew what was beyond that. So I guess I'm kind of filling in those gaps now as an adult.
Yeah. And I guess that explains why you like seasons so much.
Yes. Well, it explains my difficult relationship with seasons because I grew up not having them and I grew up just enjoying sunshine every day and expecting sunshine every day. And I find myself now living in a place with seasons, wishing for sunshine all the time, but at the same time really enjoying seeing growth and like the dieback and just the actual things that happen in the natural world in seasons that I didn't get to experience growing up. So it's giving me a more well-rounded understanding of the natural world, and that's fun.
You seem like someone who sees the world from the ground up. Did you feel like when you were a kid you noticed the green spaces in LA?
Absolutely. When I was a kid, I learned pretty much everything I know about the land and about the environment from my mom, who had so many houseplants, I can't even tell you. And now She has a bigger house and many, many, many more plants, and it's crazy. So I am who I am essentially because of who she is, because of all the gifts of observation essentially that she gave me. Hmm. She would go drive around the city, take me to school, take me all these places, and she knew all the names of everything, and she would say, oh, look, the agapanthus is blooming, and Lola, it's jacaranda season. They're in bloom right now. And so I learned all those names from her. And I think because I spent so much time with her, I started seeing the world through her eyes. And then that helped me gain, a greater understanding of where I was and what was going on around me.
Hmm. Where did her love of plants come from?
I actually don't know. I've never asked her. But I do know that my grandparents' house in New Orleans used to have this giant kind of like glassed-in room on the side of the house where they also kept hundreds of houseplants. And I learned later that my mom gave a lot of her houseplants to her father when she moved to California, because when you move to LA or when you move to California, you can't bring any plants with you. They're very strict about what you can bring. And if you have plants in your moving truck when you're at the border, they will ask you to take them out of the truck. Like, they're very intense about it. So before she moved to California, she gave all of her plants to her dad. And that's where his love of plants came from. So I think my mom is like, she's the keystone in our family. She's the reason why the rest of us started learning more about plants and about the natural world, which is exciting.
So today, do you have a lot of plants inside of your house?
I sure do. I have a lot of plants. I don't think I've been actively collecting plants the whole time I've lived in Chicago, but I've lived here for 15 years now, and that gives you a lot of opportunity for picking up various items. And friends have given me clippings, and I've bought, you know, tiny little things and just sort of watched them grow. And friends have given me plants that they thought that they killed, and then I've brought them back to life. So I have kind of like a weird doll hospital of plants.
I guess that's why it's called a nursery, right?
Yes, totally.
What do you think the value is of having plants in your home?
I think it kind of blurs the lines between inside and outside, especially when you live somewhere that is gray and freezing cold for a large portion of the year. It reminds you that things are still growing somewhere, that there is still life, and that there is still hope. I think if I didn't have plants in my house, it wouldn't feel like home to me. Mm. I think that's the main part of it, that it definitely reminds me of where I came from, and it connects me to my family, and it's almost a thing that I don't even really think about. I do take it for granted, which I try not to, but they're here. They're part of the family. And I don't name my plants. I know some people do. My boyfriend has started to name a couple of plants that he's bought, and I don't condone it.
Have you ever seen, this is a really old reference, have you ever seen that SNL skit with the googly eyes?
The googly eyes. I have. I love it. I know that they're not just decoration. They're much more than that. They're living beings, and they change, and they grow, and they breathe, and you know, when I'm not doing well, sometimes they don't do well. And when they're doing well, then I feel really great. And so we definitely have a relationship.
Oh, yeah. Sounds really symbiotic.
Definitely. Definitely.
So what brought you to Chicago?
I moved here for college and then I never left.
Simone went to the University of Chicago and lived on the South Side for several years. Her senior year, she got an opportunity to graduate early and work for the Chicago History Museum, which enhanced her love for the city.
I can't recommend more highly, if you move somewhere new, to work or volunteer or spend time at that city's historical organization or institution, because you learn so much about where you are. You learn the history, you learn the context, and it's a much richer experience, I think. So I'm really grateful that I was able to do that when I first moved here. And then, yeah, moving out of the South Side and starting my working life, and I still had a lot of friends who lived in the city, so it it was very easy to stay. And Chicago is an extremely livable city. It's very welcoming. It's very livable. It's really easy to get around. And in the spring and the summer, it's literally the best place in the world. The trees are blooming. There's tulips everywhere. The city does a really great job of landscaping, and everything feels green and alive, and there's people around, and the lake is right there. So you have just miles and miles of beach within very easy access, no matter where you are in the city. So it's a very special place. And when I moved here, I realized this is the best. Why would I go anywhere else? You know, I've lived here for a long time now, and that feeling is not quite as strong as it was when I first lived here. Now I'm starting to get the itch of wanting to see what else is around, what else is available, where else I could go, where else I could possibly belong. But I've lived here for so long, and I really do love it here, that it feels, whenever I think about the possibility of moving somewhere else, I get really sad because I have so much history here.
Would you say that Chicago is a city that values green spaces?
Yes, absolutely. So when Chicago was first established, the lakefront was set aside to always be public space. And I've been to a fair amount of cities where the biggest body of water that the city is built on is mostly industry. Mm. But that's not the case in Chicago. So the lakefront is... it's all beach, it's all parks, it's all public spaces where people can go and just do whatever they want there. And, you know, my boyfriend is from Miami, and I've spent a good amount of time down there, and I love Miami. I love that city so much. But most of the beachfront, most of the like natural areas are like private. And there's actually a place that we went kayaking a few years ago, and it was this beautiful like series of canals, and you were kind of like paddling through mangroves and by these insane mansions, and there were like these giant iguanas sunning themselves on everyone's back porches. It was a really incredible experience. No one can go there anymore. They privatized it. So it reminds me of what a special city Chicago is, because yeah, it really does value not just green space, but public space and public access to green space.
How do you like think about your outdoor time in the city? Do you think about it as going for long walks? Do you think about it? Do you think about it all, actually? If it's something that's just seamless in your life, it may be a silly question.
There are days when I just go outside because it's the only way to get to where I want to go. And it's, yeah, that in that sense, it's seamless. And I think even in those experiences, I'm paying attention to where I am, and I'm observing what's going on around me, because that's just how my brain and my eyes and my senses work. But then there are also times when I am going outside for a very specific reason. I'm going to a very specific place because I haven't been there before and I want to take a hike, or, you know, what have you. But I guess it is all kind of seamless, that I spend time outside because I enjoy it and because I want to and because sometimes I have to. But even in the have to, there are things there that are positive and can be turned into, I guess, an exercise and observation.
I'll talk to Simone about highlighting the in-between moments, how we resemble seeds in moments of growth, and how we all grow through discomfort. After a word from our sponsor, Vask. This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Vask, whose footwear has delivered trust on the trail since 1964. I talked with Sasha Cox, founder of Trail Mavens.
Trail Mavens is an organization that I started several years ago, and we are dedicated to eliminating the biggest barriers to entry, keeping women from adventuring outdoors. We lead weekend camping and backpacking adventures. We take care of all of the gear, take care of all the logistics, make sure that all the women who come on our trips learn all the skills that they need to be able to go do those things again on their own. And then maybe most importantly, we're bringing together a group of women who in most cases have never met. So they walk away with 6 or 7 or 8 new adventure buddies.
The guides all wear Vasks on the trail, and Sasha has different pairs for the different hikes she likes to take.
I like own an embarrassing number of Vast boots. So for me, my go-to, sort of my original boot that like won my heart over really in terms of Vask is the Talus Ultra Dry. And that's because those were the boots that I put on and I immediately started using them a ton. They were like perfect instantly. No blisters. They were excellent. And that actually held up because after I put hundreds of miles on my first pair, I then bought a second pair and it was exactly the same thing.
Vask has been pushing the limits of trail footwear for over 50 years, with hiking, backpacking, and trail footwear built to perform on any trail in any condition. Learn more at www.vask.com. That's www.vasque.com. We're back with Simone.
I don't know what kind of accounts you follow on social media, but I don't know. I feel like it's really easy for people to get a warped sense of like what the outdoors or what spending time outdoors is like through social media. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, I think most people, not even just thinking about the outdoors, but most people save their best stuff for social media. Mm. Save their most exciting trips and their big news, the baby bumps, the engagement rings, you know, all that stuff. That's what goes on social media. It's not, here's this tiny little weed that I found growing in a crack at the bottom of my front stoop. It's spring, guys. I'm excited. It's not that. It's always giant vistas and this like big, super bombastic experience, which it doesn't have to be. I'm always really excited about not here's the plate of food that I ate today. I don't want that level of like boring intimacy with people. I'm really interested in how other people see the world and in the smaller moments and in things that you might overlook but that caught the corner of your eye and then made you sort of do a double take. And instead of like, oh, you round the corner on this trail and then you're hit with this incredible mountain range view. Like, that's beautiful too. But like, we can't be running on like 100 all the time. You know, we have to like slow it down and like take a pause, which is kind of, I think that's my approach to social media.
Yeah. That's definitely a refreshing approach.
Well, just I would imagine you get overwhelmed and like, I don't know, social media shouldn't stress you out. And if like you're always trying to find the best story to tell and the most incredible picture to show, like that sounds stressful. Like, why not just show like this really tiny little beautiful thing that you found, or just like take a picture of something that's like whatever, but like tell an interesting story if you feel like you need to tell that story, you know, like. It's not the thing that I have to do. It's a thing that I enjoy doing. And in order to keep enjoying it, I have to keep it small. I have to keep it intimate. I have to make sure that it really reflects something honest in me. And if I don't have anything to say that day or that week or that month, I'm not going to say anything because nothing has grabbed me. But I try to keep my eyes open when I'm moving through the world. And I think, because of that, I see a lot more. You know, when I'm on the bus, I try not to look at my phone. Sometimes I'll read a book, but I try to keep my eyes open. I try to stay observant. And because of that, I think I'm able to see a lot more of the beauty that I think a lot of people probably miss when they're living in the city.
Do you take a similar approach with your blog, Darker Than Green?
In thinking about my blog, I try to balance the smaller stories. I saw this thing on the street and it jogged my memory of something, some experience that I had, you know, growing up, and I want to write about that. Or I took this hike somewhere in the forest preserve of Cook County and I want to write about that. And so I try and weave those two things together. So it's not all, here are these incredible trips I took, check out these photos of beautiful mountains, but it's more like it's both. It's living in the city and it's the city experience of nature, and it's also going out into what is generally understood as the outdoors and like weaving those two things together.
I really love your newsletters, and I know there's like a little piece of writing in just in that.
Yeah.
Are those more of the less planned, just thoughts that kind of come up for that newsletter?
Definitely. Every month, I have no idea what I'm going to say in my newsletter. I don't know, maybe you feel kind of the same with
me. Oh, I do.
Okay, great. So we're in the same boat. Yeah, I have no idea what I'm going to write about. And it's organized where, you know, I send something out at the very end of the month. And I'm hoping that month's newsletter reflects the feelings that I've had that month and the experiences that maybe I've had that month. But yeah, like when I sit down to write that little bit at the beginning of the newsletter, sometimes I'm just a complete blank brain. I have no idea what I'm going to say. And I find it's really helpful to go through. I keep a document of all the quotes that I've read and love. I try to read a lot. I don't read as much as I would like to. But every time I read a book, I keep a notepad open or, you know, the notes app on my phone, and I will just type up a line that I thought was really beautiful, and I just keep all of that together in one document. So when I'm starting my new newsletter, that's always kind of the conversation that helps spur the feelings in me. So this month, I had a quote from Alice Walker, who's one of my favorite authors, and she's talking about how when a seed becomes a plant, it must feel the inertia of the earth against it. It must feel the weight of the earth against it. And that's kind of how we feel when we're growing, that it's not easy. And, you know, you can't just pop out of your seed and become a beautiful plant. It takes time and it takes effort, and you're going to feel it. And so that really connected with me, because I've been going through a lot of change this past month. And that, you know, pushed me to write what I wrote in the beginning of my newsletter.
Yeah, I just read it. You wrote about the growth zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked what you said about it's hard to get through, but like the plant does it. It just does it. And that's what you have to do.
It just does it. Absolutely. I think that the experience of pushing yourself toward growth is universal. It doesn't even matter what the specifics are in my life, that I know that we've all had the experience of knowing that something has to change and knowing that you're the change agent, that it's not going to happen without you, and that you're the one that has to push through. You're the one that has to push through that soil in order to find the sun. Mm. So that's just kind of what I've been doing this month. You know, no big deal. Just, you know, becoming a plant. But yeah, like it's tough, but it's so rewarding once you do it and you feel so much relief and you feel like, why didn't I do this earlier? And then you move on. You know, you have that moment of being aware and being grateful for what you've just done for yourself. And then you keep going, you keep pushing forward, you keep growing.
Yeah. And it's easy to forget about how you felt in those growth moments too.
Yes. Yes. Well, because humans don't like to be uncomfortable, and we don't like to remember discomfort. So as soon as we go from being in a state of discomfort to being like back at equilibrium, it's like that discomfort didn't even happen. We forget it immediately. That's that's what my mom says. She had three kids. That's what she says. Like, that's why I was able to have three. I forgot. But yeah, I think for people who've crossed that threshold, they know what it's like. And when you are facing a situation where you have no idea what's going to happen, it's terrifying. But then once you know what happens in that situation, your toolbox just keeps getting bigger.
Mm. Definitely. I noticed in your most recent newsletter that you shared a video about the whiteness of national parks.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, in 5 minutes, it really gave a lot of information about history. You know, Teresa Baker spoke on it. I think it's Jose Gonzalez from Latino Outdoors talked. It was a really great summation of, you know, some of the issues in our national parks today.
The short film I'm referring to here is a video from GRISC.org, a Green News environmental nonprofit. The title is, Our National Parks Are for Everyone, So Why Are They So White? And in 5 minutes, it packs a lot of history in, how Indigenous people were displaced, how many parks were segregated or didn't allow people of color, and how even today parks are not as welcoming as they could be. I asked Simone how she, a Black woman, reconciles the past with the present.
It's not easy. It's very easy to just have a nice time. And I think that that is the case generally for living in the United States. If you're a person of means, it's very easy to forget about the land that you're walking on and who it used to belong to. It's very easy to forget about the tragedies that have happened all over the country. It's very easy to ignore the history. It's very easy to ignore what's happening right now in different neighborhoods, in this city, in, you know, across the United States. So when I go to national parks, I actively seek out information about who lived on this land. When was it taken from them?
Yeah.
What happened? And, you know, not all national parks are open about that information. Sometimes you really have to dig. And it's, I think it's important because I'm not interested in just living a life where I keep my blinders up and I don't acknowledge the bad stuff. Life is all of that combined. It's not just having fun. It's not just chasing your joy. It's also reckoning with your demons and reckoning with the demons that existed long before you and will continue to exist after you're gone. So the national parks are definitely a place where that history is very challenging. But if I have the privilege to be there, I'm going to do as much as I can to learn about this place and to learn about the people who this place has affected.
And would you recommend that others do that too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If you're in a national park and you're not thinking about the people who lived on that land, I think you're doing it wrong. I think it's possible to have fun and to take a beautiful hike and have an incredible experience and to learn about yourself in the context of this place and learn about the history of this place and come back with like a very well-rounded understanding. And it's impossible to know everything, of course, but I think that having both of those experiences, putting all those pieces together, is important.
Are there any parks that you visited that you feel like are doing a good job with education?
No.
No.
After we got off the phone, Simone reflected a bit on her answer and sent me this voice memo to more fully explain where she was coming from and where we might go from here.
I've traveled around the U.S. a bit, but it's been mostly concentrated in urban areas. And I've only been to a handful of national parks and national monuments. But honestly, I don't think any of them were approaching the topic of race very well. I know the National Park Service is trying to put more effort and energy into telling a deeper and more honest story about the land and the people who were pushed out or excluded from the development of the parks. So yeah, I look forward to watching those stories get more complicated. It's not a simple history, so the interpretive materials shouldn't be simple either. I think it's important to remember that these days, racism isn't usually aggressively overt. Ignoring the past, glossing over the honest history, leaving the difficult conversations to someone else, that's where the National Park Service and all of us could do to put our attention. I just read a quote that's really relevant to this conversation. It's by Bell Hooks, one of my favorite writers. And it goes, We are surrounded by a profound silence about race, and the talk we hear, the public talk about race, is usually just a pouring of gasoline onto the fire. Most of it does nothing to end racism. It's the profound silence that we live within because we lack a language that is complex enough. Our task as people who love justice is to create that language. So for me, I know I don't have all the answers, but I do know that I want to contribute to the creation of that language that Hooks speaks about. And I hope my writing and my art become a part of my contribution.
From the outside, I don't know you really well, just by reading your writing, seeing some of your graphic design work. You strike me as someone with a lot of interests.
Yes.
Is there like one way that you identify when it comes to your creative self? Like, would you call yourself more of a writer? Or would you call yourself an artist?
I've had trouble with the word artist for a long time. I think that there's like a weird stereotype about artists. And I think there's also maybe an expectation about who an artist is and how they move through the world and how they talk about themselves and their work. And that's always felt strange to me and not familiar at all. But I am reclaiming the word, and I'm learning how we fit together, me and the word artist, because I think I've always been an artist. I realize now that even when I was younger, I was a writer. I think I, you know, fell away from it for a few years, but I was always a writer. I was always observing the world in a way that would help me to understand it better and to understand my place in it. And I think that's the work that an artist does. So, yes, I'm an artist.
It feels funny saying it.
It feels funny. Yeah. I don't say it out loud very often. Sometimes I'll write it in a blurb, but I don't go around introducing myself as an artist to people. I'll introduce myself as a graphic designer because that's, you know, what I do for money. Mm. But I am very interested in changing how we talk about ourselves to people and giving more weight to the things that give us joy, not necessarily to the things that give us money.
Learn more about Simone via her blog, darkerthangreen.com, and find her on Instagram documenting the in-between moments via @UncleSweaters. I love that handle name. All links mentioned here and resources in the episode can be found on the show notes or via the landing page via she-explores.com/podcast. Big thank you to Vask for their support of this episode. We couldn't keep She Explores going without the support of sponsors. A quick note about episode 65. I incorrectly stated that Brooke Holloway spoke at 2036. This was in fact a woman named Paige Garrett. I'm really sorry, Paige.
If you enjoy She Explores, you'll probably enjoy our sister podcast, Women on the Road. Hosted by Laura Hughes, it's filled with stories of honest experiences of life on the road from the women who've lived them firsthand. And if you enjoy She Explores, please take the time to review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It'll help other people find us. Even better, share She Explores with a friend. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, so make sure to tag us so we'll see it. Until next week, catch up with us in our She Explores podcast Facebook group. There we talk about recent episodes, give each other advice, and share resources and more stories about our time in the outdoors.
Music is by Lee Rosevere, Kay Angle, Josh Woodward, Chris Zabriskie, and Emancipator.
Until next week, have fun out there.